listening to Eureka on Monocle 24 with me, Daniel Bache, host of The Entrepreneurs. Portugal's João Correa is the founder of Ingamba, a high-end cycle touring company that gives riders the chance to experience a taste of life on the pro racing circuit without the accompanying stress and competition. In his youth, the globetrotting Portuguese was bitten by the cycling bug and was a professional racer in Europe before opting for a career in publishing in New York City. Yet the urge to get back on two wheels was hard to resist, and Correa returned to the sport. Soon after, he started to dream about a life where he could combine his two loves, cycling and enjoying good food and wine in warm company. On a whim and without a business plan, he came up with Ingamba, where small groups of riders are guided over a week in picturesque regions from Chianti to rural Portugal. Monocle correspondent Ivan Carvalho caught up with Correa in Portugal's Alentejo region to hear the story of Ingamba.
Well, Ingamba is literally an accidental business that was born from a tweet. I was racing professionally in 2010, and it was my last year racing. And at the end of the season, around August, I had about 2 months to go, and I was just completely burned out. I lived in Tuscany, constantly starving yourself because that's what you do as a pro cyclist. Training all the time, you know, which is like work, where you're doing specific things for 5-6 hours a day. And I just needed to get to the end of the season. And I was having lunch at this little place where I lived in the town of Lecce in Chianti. And I remember thinking, I wish I could just enjoy the food and wine and just ride my bike for fun. And I kind of had this idea of creating the perfect week. And on a placemat, I just drew, you know, Tuesday through Saturday, what ride I would do, what places I would go and eat. And I decided to do that at the end of the season. I sent a tweet out and basically said, you know, October 12th to the 17th, trip in Chianti, who's coming? And these four guys came. You know, they each brought $5,000, and we basically spent the $20,000, you know, that whole week on food and wine. And I reopened this B&B that had been closed for many years into town. And that was it. I went back to San Francisco after that. I ended up accepting a job at LinkedIn. People on Twitter kept saying, you're ever going to do this again? I was like, no, not really. That was a one-time thing. And then I decided to do one more. And on that second trip, Bicycling Magazine wrote a large article on it, a cover story calling it the best ride on earth. And after that article hit, it was like, wow, you know, there's something here. And the business was literally born the year after.
You were born in Portugal, but then you lived in the States. So talk about the two different worlds and also how you moved into cycling, because you had other professional activities before.
So I was born in Portugal, and my parents immigrated to the U.S. in the mid-80s. I was 11 at the time, and I started racing bikes in Portugal when I was 6. So when I got to the U.S., we lived in Westchester County outside of New York City. I continued to race and ride my bike and go to school there and get integrated into sort of, you know, the American life, and eventually turned pro and came back to Europe, but decided to stop racing to go to college. I ended up going to college and then working in the publishing world for about 10 years, and then came back to racing, you know, in the late 2000s, came back to Europe. But, you know, through publishing and through cycling, you know, living in New York, in San Francisco, in Milan, you know, in kind of all over the place, and then eventually settled in San Francisco. It's funny because I kind of done a few of these pivot moments where they're more like blind leaps of faith. When I decided to stop racing, I had this opportunity to go to college, and I had a running scholarship to go to college, and I thought, oh, I'd love to experience what college is like. And once I got to college, I really loved the whole idea around college and learning, and stayed and went into publishing. So after about 10 years in publishing, you know, publishing started going a little bit down and down and down, and ad revenue started going down as the internet started growing. And I had gotten back into cycling to stay in shape, eventually started racing again, and just kind of realized that I had left something in the field and I wanted to come back to racing at the highest level. So it was sort of a combination of publishing wasn't doing great. I had this amazing opportunity to go back to racing at the highest level, and I just took a leap of faith and went and did that in Europe. And once I was done with that, I kind of jumped on the internet bandwagon and went to work for LinkedIn. You know, so it's a few surprise moments of opportunity, you know, I guess meets, you know, being prepared to take those opportunities and just diving, you know. And it's crazy because I look back now the last 10 years and I go, how did I get here? It's these chance opportunities and having the guts to go for things that I felt were very right in my heart about what I wanted to do with my life around cycling, around food, around wine, for a while around publishing. You know, I having a background in publishing, I love magazines, I love newspapers. I still read a newspaper, actual paper. Obviously, we do a magazine with Ngamba that serves no other purpose than we like to do a great magazine.
Now, today you see a lot of companies offering bike tours, these operators that do these package deals. In terms of Ngamba, what was it that you wanted to make special that would make it stand out?
What I wanted to do was share with people what it was like to be on a real pro team. So even though the trips aren't necessarily about speed, they're for people that cycling is the sport that they do. They love to ride. They work full time, but their sport is cycling. And I wanted to give them the experience of what it was really like to be treated like a pro athlete and have a $15,000 bike at your disposal and be able to choose the wheels and a power meter, things that cyclists know and like, have the best clothing, have support vehicles like what you see in the Tour de France, have soigneurs, massage therapists like the racers have, and mechanics washing the bikes every day. That didn't exist in the bike touring business before we started, and we sort of pioneered that very high-touch element of bringing an element of professional cycling into bike touring. But then equal as important for me was food and wine and hospitality. So the places we stay and the restaurants where we eat, which all come from relationships either myself or one of the guides has at the company, had to be at that same level, you know? So it's a cultural experience, but it's a cultural experience tied with sort of fantasy camp for cyclists. To me, the table, the bonding happens at the table. So you're out riding, you know, it's kind of like war. The bonding happens after, you know, after the challenges. And you're out riding, and at the end of the day, you're basically recounting the stories of the day. And it's amazing what happens to 8 to 12 individuals once they get to know each other around the table and around food and wine. I mean, for every hour we're on a bike, we're 3 hours sitting at the table. Every day it's lunch and it's dinner, and the table is a really important part of the experience. And I think there's something in our culture right now where people, they want experiences. You know, they're using their money in different ways, and they're buying experiences. They want to feel something when they have an experience, whether it's at a restaurant or a hotel or on a bike tour. And we are completely the opposite of, you know, trying to squeeze people into places, and because we really care about these places and we want to give guests a really unique experience. And you can only do that in small groups. Most of our groups are 8 to 12 people, you know, and I find that people are really craving, in a way, meaning, you know. Like I see this all the time with our guests. They're incredibly successful people. And when they're with us, they let go of what their identity is around their job, because that's how they're generally defined. And they're able to just be cyclists. There's a desire that I'm finding that people, you know, and I don't know if it's because of cell phones or because of the businesses of our life, are more and more disconnected with each other, and they want to be more disconnected from devices. And when you come to places like this, it really does bring you back and reminds you what life can be like if you're not constantly on your phone or you're not constantly stressed by work or traffic or whatever it is in the major cities, and you're just able to relax and enjoy some great food and meet interesting people.
Now, with running all these tours between the Dolomites and Provence and California, logistically it must be quite a challenge. I mean, was that something you saw as the biggest challenge to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, it is. We generally, our season is, you know, we start running trips in January, we finish in November, but really April through October, we're basically running two trips a week in two different places. The logistics part of it is very complicated, and we have, you know, a whole logistics team that makes sure the right vehicles are in the right place, the right people are in the right place, and everything is where it needs to be, you know, with a service course and about 80 Pinarello bikes. It's basically the infrastructure of a racing team without races, you know, so it's pretty infrastructure heavy. We have mechanics and we have soigneurs, and we always say the mechanics takes care of the bike of the athlete, and the soigneur takes care of the body of the guest or the athlete, you know, just like on a team. And it's very detail intensive because the bikes are, you know, they're fine-tuned racing machines. You know, these are the same bikes that Team Sky uses in the Tour de France. They're top-of-the-line Pinarello frames, their top-of-the-line SRAM equipment, zip wheels, you know, their $15,000 bikes, and they have to be every day washed and tuned, you know. So after each ride, the mechanics take the bikes and they wash them and tune them, and every day the bikes are like they are on a team, pretty much sparkling and brand new. And then the soigneurs prepare the food for the ride, and then they do the massages after the ride. So at the end of the ride, after lunch, there's a massage schedule, and every rider gets a 45-minute massage from a soigneur who's a cycling soigneur who knows the cyclist's body. So all of that takes a lot of coordination and a lot of staff to be able to offer the kind of support that a pro athlete has in the Tour de France. But because we have a 3-to-1 guest-to-staff ratio, we'll have one or two groups on the road. We always tell people the most important thing is to have the best experience you can have at whatever pace you want to go, and we support that. Some people want to ride fast, some people don't want to ride fast, and we support any speed that people ride. But generally, most people are within a minute or two of each other. It's amazing. People are very concerned, you know, can I keep up? And generally, that's just in their head, you know, with the right support. If you're a cyclist, you're a cyclist, and you're going to be pretty close to everybody else.
Do you have tips or advice that you would pass on to somebody who's trying, you know, maybe an athlete who has to transition to that next phase, which can sometimes, you know, be quite hard for them? You know, what kind of advice would you maybe give?
You know, I don't know if I'm the right person to ask that, because I never actually put together a business plan, and we never had a plan for Ngamba. It was just something that grew from a lot of passion, you know. So I think that the most important thing that I always tell people is whatever you do, do things that you love, you know, because it starts with that. And then we were very fortunate to put together an experience that we valued, and there was a market for it. But when we started it, we didn't know that there was a need for this level of detail in a bike tour at this kind of cost. And I think because people connected with that and it was done in a very honest way, I think that's the most important thing. From the entrepreneurial side, when I set it up as a business, I remember in my first year, you know, I didn't pay myself anything for the first 3 years. So it's important to go into these adventures with a backup and with a real timeline of how long it takes, and it always takes longer than people think. So for me, the most important thing was to give myself 3 years to be able to develop the concept, put it in market, which we did from the beginning, and then be patient about what would come out of it.
João Correa, founder of Ngamba, speaking to Monocle correspondent Ivan Carvalho. My thanks to Ivan for this interview. And to find out more, check out João in the pages of our brand new annual print title, The Entrepreneurs, as featured in our section on startup founders who found a gap in the market in which they operate. Thanks as well to Jack Jewers and Max Bauer, who mixed and edited this program. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.